Thank you, Blessing and Jonga. Good evening, Zimbabwe. You are listening to Studio 7 from the Voice of America on Friday, October 10th, 2014. Thank you for joining us live from Washington. This is Sandra Nyaira.
And I'm Chris Gande.
Here are our top stories this evening.
Police were called in today to break up ZANU-PF youths who fought publicly in Sakuva Stadium ahead of First Lady Grace Mugabe's Meet the People tour.
A former finance minister Tendai Biti calls on Harare to source funds for the Distressed and Marginalized Fund, or DMAF, to help revive the country's ailing industries.
Clearly, we have to find an industrial fund, maybe DMAF, which I created, or ZSREF, and put at least $4 billion, which will be used to capitalize this company.
And the Bundu Boys' only surviving member, Rise Gagona, speaks about the group and music.
Police in Mutare had to be called in today to break up fights between ZANU-PF youth from Harare and Manicaland provinces who exchanged blows ahead of First Lady Grace Mugabe's Meet the People tour at Sakuva Stadium today. Overwhelmed police officers had to call in the dog section for reinforcements, but no arrests were made. Mrs. Mugabe said she was disappointed by the fighting and begged for unity in the ruling party. Correspondent Lloyd Amoyo has the details. Still, it is called live broadcasting, Chris, and sometimes it comes with its perks. We will bring you that story later on. Now we go to the story in which former Finance Minister Tendai Biti is calling on the government to source funds for the Distressed and Marginalized Fund, or DMAF, to the tune of $5 billion to try and revive the country's ailing industries. This comes as Industry Minister Mike Bima told captains of industry that President Robert Mugabe is planning to meet them to find ways to address the deepening crisis in the manufacturing sector.
And the Confederation of Zimbabwe Industries, in its latest survey, said capacity utilization took a 3.3% dip to 36.3% in 2014 from the previous year. Capacity utilization is the percentage of the firm's total possible production capacity that is actually being used. Prolonged power cuts, liquidity challenges, and low domestic demand are blamed for the drop. Biti tells Studio 7's Blessing Zulu that industries need capital injection or more will close shop.
Well, speaking specifically for the industries alone, clearly we have to find an industrial fund, maybe DMAF, which I created, or ZSREF, and put at least $4 billion, which will be used to capitalize these companies. The tragedy, however, is that ZANU-PF doesn't care. ZANU-PF also doesn't have the skill and the means of actually understanding that this needs to be done. And thirdly, nobody trusts ZANU-PF. So the usual capitals where you could raise this kind of money, they wouldn't touch ZANU-PF. So that's the tragedy, that everyone knows the problem. Everyone knows the solution. But the solution and the capacity to act is subordinated by politics, in particular that critical ZANU-PF.
But what can the industrialists themselves do? Because it also appears there is no engagement between industry and government.
Look, there's very little that industry can do. For starters, this is not a listening government. Is an unlistening government. To be fair, Mike Bima is actually a person who listens, the Minister of Industry. But you and I know that decisions ultimately are made by Mugabe.
That was a former finance minister and MDC Renewal Team Secretary General Tendai Biti speaking with Studio 7's Blessing Zulu from Harare. Children's rights advocates Malala Yousaf of Pakistan and Kailash Satyarthi of India have won the 2014 Nobel Peace Prize. At just 17 years old, Malala makes history as the youngest Nobel laureate, while Satyarthi becomes the first Indian-born winner of the Peace Prize. Shot in the head by the Taliban on her school bus in 2012, Malala has dedicated her life to promoting girls' rights to education. Satyarthi, meanwhile, has spent more than three decades at the forefront of a movement aimed at freeing children from slave labor. The sharing of the award between an Indian and a Pakistani follows a week of fighting between the two nations across the border of the disputed region of Kashmir. The head of the Nobel Committee said, quote, regards it as an important point for a Hindu and a Muslim, an Indian and a Pakistan to join in a common struggle for education against extremism. For perspective on what the award means for people working to uplift girls, especially with the International Day of the Girl Child being marked internationally tomorrow, Tatenda Gumbo spoke with Lynette Mtemeri, an advisor with Sisters in Solidarity Zimbabwe.
I think that's a great leap forward in recognizing women. I think for very long, I know it's Pakistan, but then for all the women who are advocating for the girl child, of education, that's like a big thumbs up. That means it's awarded, people are noticing the reaction, and people are noticing our efforts. And I think that's something I highly recommend for the community and all the countries to work with women who work with gender, move forward their nations.
And of course, tomorrow, Saturday, will be the International Day of the Girl Child. Looking at this award that was given to Malala, what does it mean for the day as people will join together in celebrating and moving for the advocacy of the girl child?
I think it's like a big door of hope. Looking at this award, that means if people are going to advocate for girl child rights, for young women rights, for education rights for the young women, for gender-based balance, I think that's like a huge leap of hope. That's a door open, like there's room now. People are listening. If you keep on talking, if we keep on knocking on those doors, they will eventually work. So looking at tomorrow, I think that my message or my hope for everyone who works in gender issues and with the girl child is like, do not give up.
That there was Lynette Mtemeri, an advisor with her Sisters in Solidarity Zimbabwe, on the line from Harare with the Studio 7's Tatenda Gumbo. Police in Mutare had to be called in today to break up fights between ZANU-PF youths from Harare and Manicaland provinces who exchanged blows ahead of First Lady Grace Mugabe's Meet the People tour at Sakuva Stadium today. Right now, here is a full report from Mutare, and it's by Lloyd Moyo.
The public fight apparently pitted youths from Harare and the ones from Manicaland province. The group from Harare wanted to control the seating arrangements at the rally, while the local youths felt it was their role. The fight left ZANU-PF Manicaland provincial leadership with egg on their faces as they failed to control the youths as they exchanged blows. The police, who intervened, only managed to separate the warring youths briefly before they were back at each other's throats. Only the police's dog section was able to restore order. Some say the differences are rooted in factional fighting, as two camps aligned to Justice Minister Emmerson Mnangagwa and Vice President Joyce Mujuru positioned themselves to succeed President Robert Mugabe. Manicaland leaders like ZANU-PF Secretary for Administration Didmus Mtasa are sympathetic to Vice President Mujuru, while others like Monica Mchangwa are linked to Mnangagwa. Police spokesperson for Manicaland Province, Inspector Enoch Chishiri, refused to comment on the incident, insisting it was a non-event. Chishiri could only confirm that no arrests had been made following the fracas. ZANU-PF Youth Secretary for Administration Sheila Mtsenu said she was dismayed by some in her party whom she accused of sowing seeds of disunity, disharmony and divisions. She said this is much to the detriment of the party. Mtsenu said the youths are fully behind Grace Mugabe.
As Manicaland Province youth, we are fully behind Amai Mugabe. We will be backing her at the December Congress. But we are unhappy about the people who are moving around with her that are causing fissures in the party. We have to remain united, and to Amai, we want her as youths.
Grace Mugabe said the moment she set foot in Sakova Stadium, she could feel there was animosity and divisions within the people. She called for unity of purpose among party members.
It is nice to advise others where they go wrong. I've realized that factionalism is at play here. I've witnessed it here. It is a family dispute and we need to work on it, as it is destroying the family.
Without naming anyone, she said some leaders in the province regarded themselves as demigods, adding she will do all she can to bring factionalism to an end.
People fanning factionalism could be doing it out of ignorance, as they need guidance. Such people think they know it all, allowing to their actualization. Do you not hear me when I say, let's end factionalism?
Mrs. Mugabe said she had also realized that ever since she came onto the political scene, some senior ZANU-PF officials were trying to endear themselves with her and use her to feather their political nests.
In the short space of time, I've realized that if I'm not careful, some people are out to use me. I have seen that there are people who have scores to settle and they want to use me. But please, don't use me to settle those scores.
Opam Chinguri, the outgoing ZANU-PF Women's League secretary, also bemoaned the growing rift between party members over the succession issue, warning it was unhealthy for the party. She said corruption was also a major concern within the party, in addition to factional fighting.
When the president hands over goods to leaders to give to the people, some have chosen to give such things to their close friends and cronies. This is factionalism at play. People have not benefited from maize grain food handouts and fertilizers, as factions have chosen who to give. This is not permissible. It should end.
At least 5,000 people braved the mid-morning heat in Sakova Stadium to listen to Mrs. Mugabe, who is on a whirlwind tour of the country's provinces ahead of the party's elective congress in December, where she is expected to be endorsed as the party's next Women's League boss. Senior ZANU-PF officials, including ministers Jonathan Moyo, Ignatius Chombo, Joseph Made, Samuel Ndenge, and Superman Wanzira, attended the Sakova rally today. Reporting for Studio 7 in Mutare, this is Lloyd Amoyo.
Thanks, Lloyd. Meanwhile, ZANU-PF spokesman Rugare Gumbo says the party is still to receive a report on yesterday's vote of no confidence that saw Mashonaland West Provincial Chairman Themba Mliswa and Secretary Kindness Paradza being booted out of office. Mliswa and Paradza insist they are still in charge, describing their ouster as a non-event. Gumbo, however, said the ZANU-PF Politburo decision that no one should be suspended or fired from the party until after the December Congress still holds.
The position of the party is that we have received a full report from Mashonaland West regarding what happened yesterday. Until we receive the report, we can't make any comment or any observation. So I would appeal to you to wait until we get the report. Once we get the report, we study it, and then we come up with the answer.
Not long ago, your party came up with a position that no one will be booted out of the party before the Congress. What's your reaction to this development?
The position of the party is very clear. The Police Bureau decided that no party member is going to be suspended, tried, and so on before Congress. We want to go to Congress united, without any ill feeling. So as far as we are concerned, that decision stands. But that doesn't mean to say we can't look at what happened in Mashonaland West yesterday.
That was ZANU-PF spokesman Rugare Gumbo speaking on the line with Studio 7's Jonga Kandemiri from Harare.
Found and band lead of the Bundu Boys. And you are are listening to Studio 7.
Zimbabwe's country director for the Center for Disease Control, or CDC, Peter Q. Marx, says with the help of the U.S. and other donor agencies, Zimbabwe's health sector has been strengthened to the point where it can handle cases of Ebola if they were to occur. Speaking with Studio 7's Blessing Zulu from Sierra Leone, where he is assisting in the treatment of those afflicted, Q. Marx says many Zimbabwean doctors and other health professionals are also there to assist. He says Zimbabwe has taken the necessary precautions to avoid cases of Ebola reaching the country.
I believe that Zimbabwe continues to follow the recommendations of WHO and others, that if we have not had significant exposure to an Ebola case, then we come back and are properly monitored for any symptoms. So that's a very important policy and very important contribution of Zimbabwe.
Would you say Zimbabwe is prepared should there be a case of Ebola?
Obviously a challenge. Even the U.S. has challenges with the Ebola case, the gentleman who passed away in Dallas. But I think in terms of having the basic public health infrastructure, Zimbabwe is in relatively good shape. We, as the U.S. government and PEPFAR, the President's Emergency Plan for AIDS Relief, as well as other donors, other development partners with Zimbabwe, have done quite a bit in strengthening the Zimbabwe health system. We have information systems. We've got systems for distribution of commodities. There's been laboratory strengthening. And then, of course, since the West Africa outbreak began, there's been a number of steps taken to enhance screening at the airport in Zimbabwe. They're currently tracking hundreds of people who travel from West Africa that they're following daily to make sure they don't have symptoms.
Would you say that works, the 21-day surveillance that is in place?
That is the most effective recommended way for tracking people. I think it's important, Blessing, for people to understand that we're all globally connected. We can't just close ourselves off from these problems if we don't get Zimbabweans and others to come here and help to control the situation here. It will continue to fester, it will continue to spread. So I think it's a very important policy step.
Lastly, how is CDC working with the Zimbabwe government?
So CDC has had an office in Harare since the year 2000. And for several years, we've been focused on implementing the U.S. President's Emergency Plan for AIDS Relief. We work together with USAID and with the U.S. Embassy. Our annual budget is over $100 million per year for HIV/AIDS in Zimbabwe. And there's also funding for malaria, tuberculosis, for reproductive health, for other conditions. But we work very closely in the technical working group and with the Ministry of Health and Child Care.
That was Zimbabwe's country director for the Centers for Disease Control, or CDC, Peter Q. Marx. He spoke with Blessing Zulu.
You are listening to Studio 7 for Zimbabwe from the Voice of America in Washington.
Studio 7 can be found on the 4930, 5930 and 15455 kHz shortwave frequencies. We also broadcast on 909 medium wave or AM frequency.
Some Zimbabweans seeking to regularize their status in South Africa under the current Zimbabwe Special Dispensation Permit Program say they are facing serious challenges in accessing booking centers. One of the affected Zimbabweans, Senza Vundla, who lives in Rivonia near Johannesburg, explains.
The problem is you can call this number and then you'll hold on and then nothing is... it's happening, no response, nothing. And then you see, this thing is charging. And then you hold on for 2 hours or 3 hours. So I don't know what we can do.
Have you contacted the South African authorities about this issue?
No, because I don't have a way how we can contact them.
So now, did you actually submit your application online? And now you're trying this other method of, advancing your application?
Yes. And I also helped friends. I've submitted more than 15 applications for these other people who are close to me, trying to help them. And then I didn't charge them anything. I'm just helping them because they don't have computers.
Ngabuto Mabena of the Zimbabwe community in South Africa says the South African government is aware of these challenges.
We have now been calling that number to inquire about the requirements and the processes that are involved in doing online application. Other people that would be, say, sitting in their homes or in their cafes trying to apply. Say someone has two passports, he enters the date, the expiry date of the old passport, and the system does not allow that. And they then pick up the phone, call the phone call center to say, I'm trying to apply here, your system is saying this. To an extent that the system is now flooded, over 74,000 people have actually called that number. It has been flooded. Only 5,000 people have managed to book appointments.
Have you contacted the South African authorities about this issue?
Yes, we've been talking to VFS about the challenges that we have. This is why they then came back to us to say, look, under a week, 74,000 people have been calling.
That was Ngabuto Mabena of the Zimbabwe community in South Africa. At least 245,000 Zimbabweans who benefited from the 2009 payments program are expected to regularize their status in South Africa.
For our entertainment segment this week, Chris, Jonga Kandemiri caught up with Rice Kagona, who's one of the founding members of Bundu Boys. He now lives in Scotland in the United Kingdom. This is what they discussed.
Bundu Boys started early in the 70s. We started as King Croft hippies when we were just school boys. That was myself, Washington Gavai, Shakespeare Kangwen, and Charles Viaggi. Most of the guys are no more, but Washington Gavai is still around. We never went to school of music ourselves, so we learned by listening and seeing bands playing, and we would imitate that. And later on, we were contracted at a nightclub called Bonanza by a very good man, Mr. Chizito Mahoro. And he took us like his own children, you know, told us, listen to other bands when they are playing. And we listened from all other African bands, and all everyone was playing English music those days. That was pop music those days. Let's work together, cause we're in the same boat forever. Get out and try, stop hiding away. That's how we all started, and later on we became a band, and we changed our name to Wild Dragons as we became a better band, we thought. Then there was another guy who wanted to write music for us. He was writing music in Shona, because we couldn't play Shona music, because those days if you play anything Shona, you'll be accepted in radios and television. But this guy was called Santa Kura. He was a very good songwriter, and later on, when we are playing with this Santa Kura, we called ourselves Black Superstars, according to the contract of our recording studios. And yeah, ourselves would call ourselves the Wild Dragons. On when it was 1980, just after our independence, we thought we could commemorate the Bundus from the boys who were coming from the bush. The Bundu meant it was a slang word for bush. So we're commemorating and welcoming the boys who were fighting for our liberation during the Liberation War. So we called ourselves, let's call ourselves the Bundu Boys, as if
with us coming from the dark ages. Now we are coming to our independence. We now own the country. I started the band myself, and I've been the leader since we started. I know a lot of people used to think Big Tembo was the band leader of the Bundu Boys. Big Tembo came from Chinoy. He had this band called The Missing Tooth. And we were in Harare already playing in Saratoga Nightclub at Much Pizza in Ashfield. So because of the guys who sort of let me down for some reason, joined another group called Solidarity. So I went around and picked up one by one. So the first one I picked was Big Tembo when he was trying to get a contract in a nightclub in Harare with his band Missing Tooth. So I bumped into him through a friend whom I grew up with in Fakos, Harare, Tobias Ariketa. And I lived with Biggie for 2 months, I think. Good thing with Biggie, he liked the same music I liked as well. So the rest was history.
And Chris, from our entertainment segment with Rice Kagwana there, we go up to a sad story where Zimbabweans woke up Saturday to the news that Liberation War veteran, arts entrepreneur and founder of the Book Cafe, Paul Brickell, had died at the age of 56. Brickell had succumbed to throat cancer Friday in South Africa, where he was undergoing treatment. Well known for launching the careers of many artists in the country, Brickell was born in 1958 and grew up in Harare. His body is now in Harare, where yesterday it lay in state at his house, and today there was an event at the Book Cafe where people had the opportunity to say goodbye to him before cremation tomorrow. His son Thomas tells VOA Studio 7 that he will continue the work that his father was doing, promoting Zimbabwean musicians, nurturing young talent, among other issues.
Since independence in Zimbabwe, my dad has been a champion, I would say, of artistic and cultural freedom, primarily in the book industry, in grassroots books, which later transformed into the Book Cafe. And that remit then expanded to include music and spoken word and all sorts of cultural practices. You know, it's difficult for me as a son to say what he did for the industry in Zimbabwe, but I think right now, the outpouring of sentiments and messages and stuff from artists across the country just kind of bears witness to what an impact he made on so many people's lives.
What would you miss mostly about your father?
I don't even know where to begin. On one level, we're talking about my father here. Sure, anyone would appreciate how much they would miss their father in such circumstances. For me, speaking now, you know what I mean, as now taking over the reins of Book Cafe, then that's a whole other thing, because there I miss his experience, his advice, and all the guidance which he had been giving me over the last year. Obviously, my only thought really at this point is that I should continue his legacy and do my best in some way that he might look down on me and be proud.
Many Zimbabwean artists really appreciate Mr. Brickell and what he did for them in terms of launching their careers. How do you plan to continue bringing those artists together?
I think Book Cafe, as much as people will look at it always as his brainchild, his baby that he started, however you phrase it, but actually Book Cafe has always been home to all artists. And whilst the technical ownership of the business, you know, is something else, I think you would be hard-pressed to find an artist in Zimbabwe who didn't feel some kind of ownership of the Book Cafe. So for me, it's about continuing that spirit, that the artists who perform there and work there and their living from there should consider it home and feel that's part of their legacy too.
How would you want Mr. Brickell to be remembered?
I would want Zimbabweans to remember him as a great Zimbabwean who fought for all of our freedom of expression and continued to do so to the very last moment, you know.
That was Thomas Brickell. He's one of Paul Brickell's sons. Now he's the one running the Book Cafe. We spoke with him from Harare.
Sandy, looks like time.
It's not certain on our side, but just one recap. Our police were today called in to break up ZANU-PF youths who fought publicly in Sakuva Stadium. That's all from Sandra Nyaira. Wishing you a pleasant evening and a